Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are going to be talking about, and for some of you, some of the listeners, revisiting a tshuva of Rav Usher Weiss on OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, many people call this a famous tshuva. I'm not supposed to call things famous because if someone ever heard of it, then it's not famous. But if you are a fan of Shilohs and Tshuvos, which I assume by listening to this podcast, you have some general interest, you may have heard of this tshuva of Rav Usher Weiss on OCD in the past. And if you haven't, we're going to talk about it anyway, and you'll learn about it for the first time. But what's really important about this discussion we're going to have is that I didn't just simply invite another rabbi on to summarize and schmooze about the tshuva with me, but I thought it was very important because this is a very fundamental recent source in the entire discussion of halacha mental health. I wanted to bring on someone who's not only a rabbi, but also a mental health professional who can analyze this tshuva from both the halachic standpoint and from the clinical psychological standpoint as well. And so it is my pleasure to introduce Rabbi Dr. Sol Haimov, who is a clinical psychologist in private practice with a specialty in treating children, adolescents, and young adults with anxiety and behavioral disorders. He currently serves as the program director and associate rabbi of the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach. Additionally, he is the co-author of the Handbook of Torah and Mental Health, which catalogs over 50 Jewish sources that are related to mental health treatments, diagnoses, and theories, and are supported by peer-reviewed studies. He has given lectures, workshops, and trainings to clinicians, schools, parents, and the general community on various topics related to religion and mental health. And so I couldn't think of a better guest to have on to discuss such an important tshuva related to Torah and mental health. We're going to be talking about Rav Usher Weiss's tshuva, and I believe this is actually the first tshuva of Minchas Usher we are discussing on the podcast. So, Rabbi Haimov, if you could tell us just very briefly about Rav Usher Weiss, about the significance of this tshuva, where it's coming from, and what do we have to know about it?
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kurtz, for that warm introduction. It's an honor to be here today and looking forward to a very meaningful and educational conversation. So, yeah, Rav Usher Weiss is a huge, huge Talmid Chacham, has been very prolific in his writing. He's the author of the Minchas Asher, a five-volume set on Chumash, as well as many svarim with explanations and commentary on Masechtos and Gemara, and has come out with a Shilohs v'Tshuvos as well, the Shilohs v'Tshuvos of the Rav Usher Weiss. He's American-born, lives in Israel right now. He's a Klausenberger chassid, and which I think is actually going to be relevant for the tshuva. You see some crossover to some nice chassidic ideas, and Diana Rosh Kol has yeshiva in Israel, and just considered, I think, by many one of the greatest kind of post-human art in our generation.
Absolutely. I think something unique about Rav Usher Weiss is that he really has influence throughout the Orthodox world. He's mainly situated, as you mentioned, more in the Haredi community, but also many people who are in the OU, YU circles turn to him for guidance as well. He's known for being not just erudite, but also having a strong handle on the metzias, on the facts on the ground and common sense. And I think you're going to assess his understanding of the facts on the ground when we discuss his tshuva. So wonderful. Let's discuss. So what exactly is the shaila? Where does OCD come into tension and conflict with halacha?
Yeah, great question. I will give some word of introduction and background. One of the talks I've given when I lecture on this topic is called "The Thin Line Between Piety and Pathology," and really, in halacha and our Jewish observance, there are so many levels. We're in the time of Hanukkah now. We talk about mahadrin, min mahadrin. There are so many extra stringencies that one could take upon themselves, and it becomes a big question: at what point is it a you know, a healthy religious, spiritual expression of faith and devotion? Or on the other hand, is it something more pathological, something unhealthy, something that's even clinically diagnosed as a mental health disorder, such as OCD, where someone has obsessional thoughts or compulsions of always trying to do extra to make sure they're doing the right thing, to the point that it's beyond the normalcy of what someone from that typical community would do.
So what would be examples just of OCD in the general world? And then maybe we could talk about its applications for someone who is devoutly religious.
Sure. Great question. And OCD has received a lot of depictions in modern pop culture, but defined in clinical terms, the O stands for machshavos, thoughts. It's a mental process of having obsessional thoughts, intrusive thoughts that kind of repeat or get stuck in one's head and cause anxiety or doubt. It's also sometimes referred to as the doubting disease, which is very important in this tshuva we're going to talk about today. And then there are compulsions. Compulsions are what I call pu'ulot, actions, behaviors, where someone has a ritualistic or repeating things a certain amount of times until it feels right, needing to do things in a certain order, or not sure if one did something and having to go back and check repeatedly. So making sure you locked your door, making sure you turned your oven off. And again, when I assess for this in my practice, it's not just once or twice. It's a debilitating amount.
Right.
You got
me worrying, because I'm one of those people who checks the lock on his door three times. And it happens to be I grew up in not the safest neighborhood, so maybe that was the stressor that caused that to come into place.
Well, there you go. There's context. Yeah, is that right? Yeah, people always say, oh, they. I hear when people even pull into my office, I hear how many times they lock their car. You know, two times, three times. I think that's considered a normal amount of times. Yeah, but anything more than that, it's pervasive into so many areas. To the point that the person really doesn't have control over it.
Right. And so I think, again, you're an actual expert in psychology. I'm a guy who, just like most pre-smicha people, got a BA in psychology. Sure. But if I remember correctly, for something to constitute a disorder, like you said, it's when it becomes debilitating. You can't function. You can't live your life properly. I think one of the examples that gets raised, and I'm wondering if you see this manifestation of OCD, comes with pre-Pesach cleaning.
Oh, yes.
Especially one of the things I like to remind people is that you're only over bali or bali matzah. There's only an issue of retaining chametz if it's a minimum of a kazayas. Mm-hmm. Maybe they, and it's maybe, especially if you hold that a kazayas is a huge shear, right? Yeah. But lakula, maybe it's not something to worry about. But do you see kind of OCD being manifested in those practices?
Yes, definitely. And as I heard from Ephraim Goldberg, returning chametz into dust and not dust into chametz.
That's a good.
Right, it's a very nice thing. I love that idea. Right, we do kol chamir. We're saying our chametz is like dust, but the dust under your refrigerator or your oven is not chametz. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll give a plug, a shout out to the book that you mentioned that I co-authored now in, I'll hold it up for anyone watching, The Handbook of Torah and Mental Health. We have a chapter here on OCD, and the example we give as a Torah source is actually a Mishnah in Pesachim that talks about cleaning your house for Pesach of, do we have to be choshesh, worried that a chulda, a weasel, some type of rodent, took a piece of chametz from one house and brought it to another house. And the Mishnah says that you don't have to be drive yourself crazy, so to speak, ein le davar sof. There's no end to the amount of possibilities that we could think of. And therefore, do the best you can. And that's enough, which is a very important idea in OCD. Rav Asher Weiss, actually, we'll see soon, quotes that phrase as well, ein le davar sof. So yes, Judaism could trigger many symptoms of anxiety and OCD, especially around Pesach, where the stakes are so high and they're, kares, the punishment for owning chametz is so severe. It could really play into someone's nervous tendencies to the point that they are unhealthy in their cleaning for Pesach.
Right. And this is a difficult thing that whenever you see someone who's very medakdik in mitzvos, on the one hand, one might say, oh, I should really admire him. But when does that dikduk in mitzvos, I suppose once it becomes debilitating and they can't move on without doing it, that's when it's no longer something to be commended for. And it's sometimes hard for the outside observer to really determine that.
Yes, exactly.
So just one more question before we jump into the content of the tshuva. Does religion especially halakhic observance, right? We're not just a, you know, about feeling, you know, feel good religion and spirituality. We have actual obligations with shiurim and measurements for what we have to do. So with halakhic observance, I ask Michiel if I'm phrasing this irreverently, does it exacerbate someone who has OCD, or is it just another manifestation of it?
That's a great, great question. It's the top, you know, million-dollar question that's asked in talks about OCD in the Jewish community. So what I've seen, you know, based on the survey of the research, is that the research shows that, you know, OCD is not more pronounced, is not more common in the Orthodox Jewish community than in comparison, proportionally to the general population, but it is more likely to be expressed in religious ways. So that is, if someone has OCD and they're religious, they're more likely to express their OCD in religious ways. And like you mentioned, halacha has so many different rules to follow. You put on your right shoe first, and then you tie your left shoe first, and different ways to clean yourself in the bathroom. And there's so many areas. There is no area of halacha that of life that halacha doesn't touch. And it definitely is ripe for kind of a compulsive problem.
Right. So jumping into the tshuva. So Rav Asher Weiss, he's not really dealing with chametz so much. I don't remember if he makes an offhand reference to it, but he's talking about OCD. What's the particular challenge that comes to his desk?
Sure, I'll read a little bit from it and I'll go over it. And it's actually fascinating because I had an exact case just like this that I worked with clinically with an Orthodox man, which is how I originally came to discover this tshuva, because the shaila was the exact same shaila that my patient was dealing with. And so it is actually a very common expression of OCD, especially in the Orthodox world. So he calls me Talmid Chacham Muflag V'Yirei Shemayim, you know, a great Torah scholar with fear of heaven. And, you know, he talks about how the person asking the question says that he's struggling with OCD, obsepsiot, he says, and his particular issue is pronouncing brachas, you know, saying the text of the blessings, and specifically the name of God, the Shem Hashem, which is the essence of the blessing, and needs to be pronounced a particular way. And his obsessions are, and his compulsions are, whether he pronounced it properly, and he finds himself needing to repeat it. Doesn't say how many times, but many, many times over again until he says it properly. And then he goes on to say that, you know, he's worried about making blessings, about you know, washing for tea bread and to say Birkat HaMazon afterwards. He wants to avoid any situations of having to make blessings because he... Yeah, because he feels like he's not saying the blessings properly, so maybe best to minimize as many blessings as possible.
So he's like avoiding eating because it'll bring him into that situation. So that trick, that's certainly debilitating if you can't even have a healthy relationship with food, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He's doing things that are beyond the, you know, the norm for that community. And he what's interesting about this specific question is that he says that he's in therapy, right? And Rav Asher Weiss says, Ladata Rofim Hamumchim Betchum Zeh, according to the doctors and the experts in this area. So it's really nice. Derech HaTipul, he says the therapy is Shela Olam Lo Yachzir Pamaim Al Dibor or Tefila. You're not, he said the therapist told him he's not allowed to go back and repeat it. You know, he's doing what's called exposure and response prevention, exposure therapy, which is the gold standard clinical treatment for OCD, is to go against your compulsions, not to give in to them. It's this voice in your head, almost like a Yetzer Hara is telling you, do it again, do it again. Maybe you didn't say it right. Maybe you didn't do it right. You have to go back. And the therapist is coaching the patient, don't listen to that voice. Ignore, do the opposite of what it says. If it's saying to repeat it, don't repeat it.
If I keep locking my car door, once I lock it, you know, put the keys in your pocket, don't touch it again.
That's exactly. Exactly. And, you know, with coaching and guidance from a trained therapist, because that's easier said than done, right? If you could do that, you wouldn't have OCD, obviously. So so how to do that properly is very important, especially when you want to make sure that even mentally, the person's thought process is not pathological as well.
Right. And so I can imagine just from a halakhic standpoint, since, you know, vast majority of brachos we understand are instituted rabbinically, the halakhic stakes are a little bit lower. though, if I recall correctly, he also talks about the mitzvah of reciting Kriya Shema, which is mid-to-Oraisa. It's biblically mandated. And I think that creates like a more of a halachic challenge about what kind of leeway there is to be mevatel, to neglect fulfilling a mitzvah, say, or at least in his mind, he's being mevatel and I say.
Right, exactly. Well, that's the most important part of this discussion is what happens when a treatment, it could be a medical treatment or in our cases, a mental health treatment, flies in the face or contradicts halacha. You know, what do you do in that situation where the doctors are telling you you need to eat non-kosher, the medication is not kosher, or in our situation, you need to not repeat Shema or the brachas, and you may not even be yotze, and the doctors are saying, the psychologists are saying, you're not allowed to repeat, that's going to feed into your OCD. So he's basically asking, how am I yotze brachas? How am I fulfilling the mitzvahs of Shema if the treatment is telling me to go against halacha, so to speak?
Right. So even if I intellectually know that I mispronounced a word in Shema, I guess knowing is a tough term to use here because I guess the compulsion is telling him that it's making him doubt it. But the question is, can we tell him halachically, even if you 100% bevados know that you didn't pronounce it correctly, you still don't go back because that would impede your therapy. So what would be the halachic argument? I mean, we're talking about a mitzvah midoraisa here. That's pretty heavy stuff. So what's the argument that Rav Asher makes? Does he say that's okay?
Yeah, sure. That's basically the bulk of the tshuva is him going with the premise that you may not be yotzei the brachas or kriyat shema, and here are all the reasons why it's okay anyway, halachically, using some really fascinating halachic principles, and some that I think are what we call super halachic, like kind of going into the more the meaning. He talks about specifically about prayer, being more of a feeling and a heartfelt kind of personal spiritual mitzvah as opposed to other mitzvahs, and maybe that's enough, like your intention or your effort.
Right. So prayers avoda salev. So because that's like a service that we're connecting to God on a subjective level. So, but the I guess the issue with that argument is that, as we mentioned, OCD can manifest in many different ways that require deeds, such as cleaning for Pesach.
Right.
So this helps when OCD manifests in recitation of brachos and Shema. But that argument wouldn't help as when we get to Meisim, when we're talking about actual deeds. I did notice in Os Aleph toward the beginning, he makes the argument that we know that you're not expected to be Mevazvis Yosem Echomesh Al Mitzvah Say, that you don't have to give more than a fifth of your assets to fulfill a positive mitzvah. Now, Shema might be Midoraisa, but it's a positive mitzvah. And so the same way, there is a limit on how much money you have to sacrifice to fulfill a mitzvah. His argument seems to be there's a limit on how much mental anguish, how much of your health you have to give over to fulfill that. I'll just mention something to you. I love your perspective as a mental health professional. Not so long ago, I put together a sugya, a shir on the sugya of istinus in halacha, those who are overly sensitive to the heat. And I saw, I think it was in Binyan Shlomo, that he makes an argument for someone who's mitzta'er, someone who feels a lot of discomfort psychologically. Also, there is a limit to how much tsar, how much distress one has to endure in order to fulfill a mitzvah. Not just when it comes to sukkah and things that have built-in dispensations, but in kol ha-Torah kula. So I don't know if istinus comes in to your mental health discussion.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating because everyone has their own levels of comfort and the key clinical term here is scrupulosity, which is a term for people who are overly scrupulous. They have an obsession with being kind of religious and meticulous with religion and. It's, to some degrees, it's a personality-based difference where some people are more comfortable or tolerant of doubt or uncomfortable situations, and other people have perfectionist tendencies and need to do something the best way or the most perfect way possible. And, that kind of – that's where the question comes in, is how much of that is their own personality governing their religion, or is it really – a religious practice. And like you mentioned, Rav Asher Weiss, he talks about the difference between positive commandments and negative commandments, where over here, the worst case scenario, so to speak, was that he failed to fulfill a positive commandment, you know, by reciting Shema or saying a blessing, which, you know, he argues, I don't know if you want to get into technicalities about whether, you know, eating without saying a blessing is just a bit to kiyamase, you know, a failure to fulfill a positive commandment or lotase, or is there a sin involved in eating without a blessing? But he seems to make the point that, you know, the worst case scenario is that you're not doing a positive commandment and that your health, you know, your status of a chole here takes precedence over that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Though it's interesting is I guess this beckons us to, mm-hmm. this begs the question, mm-hmm. would we go so far as to say that one can violate a losa, say one could, mm-hmm. violate an iser in the Torah, yeah. in order to help one's health? And I think in Os Beis, moving further in the tshuva, mm-hmm. he seems to make an analogy to breaking Shabbos. Mm-hmm. He quotes the Gemara, which says, Mutav sheichal Shabbos achas v'lichal Shabbos harbe, that we make a sacrifice, we'll break one Shabbos so you can keep future Shabbos, which I found to be just such an interesting analogy, because that seems to be a svara which is unique to Hilchos Shabbos. And here, mm-hmm. he is extrapolating it to breaking anything in the Torah. Yeah. He brings in the Chasam Sofer, I believe,
right,
as well.
Right, sure. Yeah.
You want to talk about that case in the Chasam Sofer?
Sure. Yeah. And that Shabbos analogy does come up a lot in the mental health and halachic literature, which is now starting to trickle in more and more as, you know, this tshuva by Rav Asher Weiss is really a landmark tshuva in paskening on what to do in a situation where a therapy, and we'll talk about even the, you know, the type of therapist here, of course, someone with, you know, an Orthodox background, or in my case, you know, I have smicha as a rabbi, is extra sensitive to the halachic issues. And yet, you know, our job, we take a Hippocratic oath, is to, you know, do no harm and to do what's best for our client or our patient. And sometimes those interventions do actually violate prohibitions in the Torah. You know, the classic case is for a, you know, usually a young woman, an Orthodox woman who needs to be hospitalized in a special treatment facility for eating disorders, is a very common shaila, where she needs to be, she's, you know, at danger of starving herself to death. And there's not many, maybe there'll be more in the future, but there's not many from or kosher programs. So they'll have to be eating non-kosher food. And from what I've seen in the literature, many poskim allow that, you know, unequivocally, because it's a pikuach nefesh, you know, it's for their health. And so here too, when it comes to Shabbos, he quotes, you know, basically a similar scenario of a nice tshuva from the Chasam Sofer about something interesting, someone who's lost in the desert and they don't know what day Shabbos is. So even though they have to keep the prohibitions of Shabbos, he says they're allowed to still try and escape the desert. They're allowed to go outside the Tachum to violate Shabbos in order to save themselves and to be rescued. So he compares that to our situation here, where yes, you're technically violating a halacha, but you're leaving the Tachum, you're leaving the desert, and you are, that will allow you to fulfill many more mitzvahs in a much better way.
Absolutely. And I think this Chasam Sofer, if I recall correctly, Rav Moshe had a similar case about someone being, I don't know if maybe the terminology has changed, you'll forgive me if that's not the right term, but someone was put in an institution or institutionalized. Yeah. Is there a more?
Yeah, I guess I admitted to an inpatient.
Admitted to inpatient. Yeah. I figured there was some updated way of saying, yeah. Okay.
That was the worst way.
Intuition was correct on that. That's good to hear. Yeah. So so this Chasam Sofer, I believe, gets cited in Igros Moshe also. Like, this is like the golden precedent for someone who, I think his case was, someone was a shota, someone, you know, lacked basic mental faculties, and putting them in this inpatient place would be able to heal them, but they would be eating non-kosher food in the interim. Mm. But nonetheless, we look at the full picture of being able to bring them back to a healthy state of mind. That is something that we can violate one Shabbos, so to speak, in order to fulfill others. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, what really grabbed my attention is that toward the end of Os Beis, he mentions that he invokes Gedola Aveira Lishma, the idea of doing an Aveira with good intentions is sometimes permissible. And he seems to, like, you know, after marshaling all these different svaros, he says, and you know what? Maybe it's an Aveira Lishma, which is it's remarkable that he invokes that.
Yeah, it's incredible. In fact, it's highlighted. I have all things highlighted on my page, you know, in my notes, that phrase, the Gedola Aveira Lishma, which is a of course, a slippery slope and such a dangerous thing to say. But I think, you know, getting back to Rav Osher Weiss's Hasidic background, which I mentioned in the intro, you know, you could try to answer every halachic shayla, you know, from a purely technical halachic analysis of whether something is mutter or aser. But as Rav Osher Weiss says, another place in this tshuva, like ain't a davar sof, and many I've heard from many rabbanim and poskim who serve kehilas and congregations that with one answer comes 10 more questions, right? And having a overarching principle that could really, you know, kind of answer everything and really address the heart of the matter is so key. So he basically says that this is, you know, he says two things which I find really important. He says that it's the most important thing is to get better, is to heal, and really to follow the prescription of your professional, your mental health professional, which, you know, we always have to kind of assume is someone who's aware and sensitive of the kind of the cultural aspects of religion, but to get better. And even if that means, quote unquote, doing an avera, a technical, I guess, you know, minute avera, the overall picture of this is the Shema. This is, you're not doing it out of, you know, a desire to sin. You're doing it because you need to get better is the overarching principle here, which is so important.
Right. But I think it's also important what you mentioned, that once you invoke these ideas like avera lishma, we get worried about a slippery slope. You know, one has to know when to apply it. A few episodes ago, we had Rabbi Ari Klapra, and we talked about pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh, the imperative to preserve one's life. I remember during COVID, everyone, not everyone, but you go on Facebook and Twitter, all these places of a true, you know, true discourse, right? Yeah, so a lot of people discovered these terms called pikuach nefesh, and then they just threw it right and left. But I think this is why it's important to have people like you who have the halachic erudition as well as the mental health training to really be able to understand and responsibly apply concepts like this. It's not just for anyone to apply. You know, Rav Osher Weiss is using it, but even he only uses it after finding other justifications. He didn't just straight off the bat say avera lishma. So I think that's noteworthy.
No, it's a great point. And I would say that even though Rav Osher Weiss's tshuva is groundbreaking and so integral to the understanding of treating Orthodox clients with OCD, from a purely clinical standpoint, if I was analyzing this, you know, as a clinical psychologist about the you know, the fidelity to the treatment, there are some things that I would, you know, in my humble opinion, with all due respect, kind of tweak or you know, wish that Rav Osher Weiss would maybe even said a different way.
Ah, and this is precisely why I wanted you on our podcast, which is to assess this from a mental health standpoint. Right, credit must be given to Rav Osher Weiss, who he mentions he consulted some Rofim, some doctors at the beginning. Yeah. But as we know, the field develops, and we don't know who he consulted, but I'm sure he did everything, lishma, due diligence. But I think what you wanted to talk about is really section Gimel, all the way at the end of the tshuva, in which he talks about a father/husband who's making kiddush at the table on Shabbos. So what does Rav Osher Weiss advise, and does that make sense with the current mental health recommendations?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just to give one more just kind of word of background is the idea is to treat OCD, you don't want to give what's called reassurance. The questioning, the doubting is what's called reassurance seeking, where someone's not sure and they need someone to tell them, yes, this is good or no, this is wrong. And it's a it's like drinking salt water. It's never ending. And part of the treatment is not to give that clear, definitive answer all the time, or not to give in to the OCD that's saying, maybe you're not Yotze, maybe you didn't do it right. And after Rav Osher Weiss, you know, spend many, many words saying, you know, listen to your therapist, and this is avera lishma, and it's a mitzvah ase. At the very end, he says, okay, but if you really, really want to be careful and avoid all, you know, problems, so have someone else, you know, make blessings for you. Have someone else be motzi you for kiddush, let's say, like your wife on Friday night, since she's obligated too. So, you know, take yourself out of situations where you don't have to make the blessing, which is, from a clinical standpoint, feeding in, you know, giving in to the OCD, and I kind of wish he didn't necessarily.
So he brings back in the halachic analysis, because his whole tshuva, the subject is the individual with the OCD, and he says we can find an individualized halachic solution for you. But when you're at your Shabbos table and you have guests over and you have other people who have their own independent individual halachic obligations, We can't just give you a heter now, but who says you're being motzi everybody else? But you're saying is by telling him to be choshesh for other people, that is really walking back everything that the tshuva led up to. Because now he's gonna say, well, I guess this isn't a real heter. I guess what I'm doing is not real because it's not real enough to count for other people.
Exactly. Exactly right. If it's allowed, it's allowed. I mean, if you shouldn't listen to your OCD and, you know, it's like he says in other places, it's just, you know, in one place that Chuba, he says that Shereza Teva Mahuta Shomachlash Za Adam. That it's the nature of this machla, of this illness, to doubt yourself and to be always worried and anxious that you didn't do what was right. And then after saying that that's okay and don't worry, you know, this is, it's more important to get better, he says, he gives him a loophole, a way out, which we know in treating OCD could really undo the entire treatment, because in his mind he's probably thinking, I'm going to minimize as much as possible my opportunities to say blessings, so he may not even get better as quickly as we would like.
So I think this is a really good point, which is we have a tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss, which it really is groundbreaking. It's very I don't mean in a political sense, but I mean it's very progressive in terms of it taking into account mental health practices. I mean, I got a kick out of, he quotes a stipler on the top of the final page, but actually he's like, I was mechaving to the stipler who says sarich lomer lo behechlet bli tam. He actually says initially not to explain, don't give a rationale, just say what to do and don't explain anything, like what you said. But then you're saying at the end of the tshuva, he walks it back and almost undoes the advice. It's interesting because on the one hand, we have the considerations of this individual, but is it fair to everyone else who's not going to be yotzei their obligations because of what he needs? Now you could say, maybe that's kol yisrael reivim zeh bezeh. Maybe we should be willing to compromise our own, observance the right word, our own kiyum in this particular mitzvah in order to help our friend, especially when, kiddush, at least on the wine is midrabanan. So I think we certainly have what to work with. In our last few minutes that we have together, I'm wondering, you mentioned, and the reason we chose this tshuva of Asher Weiss is because it's a recent, really groundbreaking tshuva, any way you slice it, even with that asterisk at the end, like you mentioned, I think we would agree it's still a groundbreaking tshuva. So I'm curious, fast forwarding now to 2023, the end of 2023, when this recording is taking place, how do you see the broader field of Hilchos mental health developing? I admire the book that you put together, in which you make sure at the beginning of every discussion there's a Torah source, which you connect to peer-reviewed, evidence-based research. I know that there's different people out there. I know was it Rabbi Yoni Rosenzweig
wrote
a book also, Nafshi B'Shelasi. So I'm curious, how do you see this field developing? And then if there's anything else, any other places that we can learn from your Torah, any other ideas, I'd love for you to share that with us.
Yeah, I think it's a fastly growing and developing field. It's catching up to the medical field, which has, years and years of a head start of Shelo V'Tshuvot, to dealing with all kinds of different complicated medical issues. And at first there was a bit of a stigma in the Jewish community about mental health treatment in general, and I think we're seeing more and more that community leaders and all different Jewish communities are seeking out mental health treatment for things like OCD, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and either prefer to work with an Orthodox firm therapist, whether they're a rabbi or not, or at least have some type of halakhic advisor. I know many firm therapists do have different rabbim that they will call to speak to about a shiloh, or even the community of their patient, in order to, it's very important to know what's normal in the context of someone's culture. To share a quick anecdote, when I worked in a group practice in a clinic, my colleague, who was a Jewish woman but not observant or knowledgeable, she worked with a Lubavitch chassid, who told her that every string of hair on his beard it has kind of magical lights that gives. Yeah, she wanted to have him committed to an inpatient hospital. She asked me. She said, "This guy, he's telling me that his hair is like light, and he can't pull out one." And she asked me if that was normal. If that's like a, do I know about something like this? So I said, "I think he's, you know, quoting to Tanya, or that is a I know the idea he's referring to, but his presentation is beyond the norm of a typical Lubavitch chassid."
Debilitating at that point.
Yeah, right. Debilitating. It's extreme, right? He would, you know, hold his beard all Shabbos to not pull one out. You know, things like that, where you have to be knowledgeable of the community norms as well as, you know, the psychological concepts to make a informed decision of what's pathological and what's not. So I think we're seeing more and more with podcasts and discussions like these, where people are discussing, you know, how to treat mental health in a culturally sensitive way.
Absolutely. And I admire all the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I guess our listeners should know that mm-hmm. if they ever need someone who is a rabbi mm-hmm. and mental health professional and has good credentials in both mm-hmm. of those areas, who could fuse both together, Rabbi Dr. Sol Chaimov is your man. I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights and your expertise with us here today. And we'll, God willing, we'll put a link to your book in mm-hmm. the description of the podcast for those who'd like to purchase it. And otherwise, wishing you continued mm-hmm. hatzlacha in your very important work that you do.
Amen. Thank you so much for having me and being a voice to spread awareness about this very important topic.
Absolutely. All right, Kolto, take care.
Thank you. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.